Hello, and welcome to KCRPi. I'm your host, Rochelle Gardner-Rowe. On today's Slice, I'll be speaking with Arzi Umali, who has since 2009 been the assistant director of the Women's Center at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, where she develops programs that advocate for the advancement of women's equity on campus and in the Kansas City community. Before her time at the Women's Center, she received her BFA in painting from the University of Kansas and a Master's of Public Administration from UMKC. We'll be talking about some of the research she did as part of her master's on the representation of women artists in our local institutions, as well as her work at the Women's Center and, of course, what influences her own work as a painter. And one last thing before we get into the interview. I want to note that the study we discuss is from 2010, so while it can't be said to reflect representation on our local arts institutions today, talking about the history of representation, as well as what these kinds of research projects reveal and how they can be done, and hopefully repeatedly, is certainly relevant. So I'll be back with Arzi Umali after the break. The KCRPi podcast is supported by an inspiration grant from the Arts KC Regional Arts Council, whose mission is to unleash the power of the arts. Whether you're an artist, company, or community member, check out artskc.org to see how you can join them in their vision to build a city of great dreams and vigorous life where everyone participates in and benefits from the arts. Now, back to the episode. Arzi Umali, welcome to KCRPi.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, in this project, we've both looked forward, backward, and in the present. So we'll start out by looking back a little bit. In 2010, you completed a project called How Great Her Art, Kansas City Museums and Women Artists, which studied the organizational policies and practices of four institutions in the Kansas City area and the inclusion of women artists in their permanent collections. Those institutions were the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art, the Spencer Museum of Art, the Kemper Museum of Contemporary Art, and the Nerman Museum of Contemporary Art. So my first question is, what was the impetus for you to do this study? And then after that, what were your conclusions from the study?
The reason I started the project was, well, first of all, it was my interest as an artist. I am a painter, and knowing that when I was going through art school, studying as an artist, but also in my art history classes, that there weren't very many artists in our art history that were women. And it always seemed like conversations were about all these great masters in art history, and they all had male names. And I don't even remember until taking a women in art class that any woman's name was mentioned as a great artist. And so when I was in grad school studying public administration and public policy, I got the opportunity to do this extended research project on policy, any kind of policy I wanted. And so I looked at arts policy. I thought, okay, what is it that is actually perpetuating sort of this exclusion of women in conversations about art? And so I, as a good researcher, started looking into, well, who are the deciders? Who are these decision makers that are really informing the public and the public good about how we define great art, who gets to be in museums, and who gets to be included in art history books. And so I just started looking at, well, here are the museums that are in my neighborhood. So let's look at their collections. I started out with websites, and I just went to these four museums' websites to see how they represented the women artists in their collection. And it turned out that their websites really sucked. You know, a lot of them talk about the history of how the museum started, the founders. They talked about, you know, the great collections of art that they had and highlighted the artists that they collected, you know, there were Picassos and Van Goghs and Monets in these museums, but very few women were mentioned when they were highlighting their permanent collections. And so if this is what they're telling their audiences on the World Wide Web about the great artists in their collections, what are they showing on their walls? And so I emailed the museum directors and some of the curators, some of whom I knew personally, and I just sent a pretty frank email saying, hey, did you realize that I've done a count on your website? And I've noticed that out of all of the artists that you've mentioned, there is only a fraction of them, or if any, I think some of the museums had zero on their websites that talked about the women artists in the permanent collections. And I got a pretty good response from all of them. And then I went deeper into my research after that. I started pulling numbers and lists of artists from the museum registrars. And so actually physically did a count. And some of the museum registrars had great lists that were already sorted by gender. Those were easier to actually come up with those numbers. And so after reviewing all the data that I had collected and doing research from other institutions around America, then I contacted the curators and directors again and asked for interviews to learn more about what their policies were. I researched strategic plans and acquisition policies and documents if the museums had them. And I found that, yes, museum collections have far more male artists than women. I think it was maybe 24% was the average at these four museums. And that the curators and museum directors have a lot of control and power over what the museums collect. And at some museums, it's a matter of funding and actually finding the right resources that will allow them to collect artwork specifically by women. Some of them, it's about the curator and their sensibilities of understanding that there is this discrepancy, there is this deficit in their collection. But from all of the curators that I talked to, they pretty much did recognize that, yes, this is something that people should be aware of, that museums do need more art by women. But it was, for, I would say, three of them, difficult to build up their collections because of multiple reasons. Like I said, whether it's funding, whether it's having to convince museum stakeholders that this is an important issue to follow, or whether it's, you know, balancing, do we want, quote unquote, quality, or do we want to just fill gaps in our collection, which is an interesting thing in its own. But there was one museum, the Spencer Museum in Lawrence at the KU campus, that was the only museum that, number one, had written policy that informed collecting more art by women and also people of color, and number two, put that in practice. So those are just in general what my findings were out of this research.
And we certainly should note that this research was done now 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I would think it'd be really interesting, hint, hint, any grad students out there, to do a follow-up project or a thesis in this area, because this kind of research does need to be done every so often just to see where we are and how we've improved. From an anecdotal perspective, it does seem or feel like we're doing better at this. I mean, just at the moment, you can point to the Kemper Museum of Contemporary Art, and they have not one but two exhibitions of women artists. Magnetic Fields is looking at women of color in the field of abstraction who may have not gotten the due they've deserved over the years, as well as Women to Watch, which looks at local artists, but also has the backing of the National Museum of Women in the Arts. So, I mean, just based on those two things alone, it at least has me feeling it's a rosier picture.
I think we're moving in the direction of awareness with understanding that, yes, women, even though this is 2017 and the feminist art movement was, you know, back in the late 60s and 70s, early 70s. So I think there's an awareness that, yes, women have been written out of history, art history. There are far more male artists receiving solo shows across the country, included in art and collections and museums. But again, I think even in 7 years, I don't think if these four museums have collected more artwork by women, I don't think they're making up the gap. I don't think enough collecting has been done, especially at the Nelson Atkins Museum, which it has interesting acquisitions processes where all of the acquisitions at the Nelson are done through private donation, really. And so according to the curators there, any of the artwork that they purchase or receive or acquire for the museum all have to come through private funding. And it's difficult, or they haven't yet found a major donor who has said, here's a big chunk of money, use it to buy more art by women. I haven't heard, you know, news of that. I think if they had, they would have contacted me to say, hey, good news. We've got a few million dollars, so we're going to buy some more artwork. It does also take a lot of research, especially if you're looking for women artists back in the Renaissance and back in early American times. A lot of the women artists who worked during that time, if they were even allowed to work as artists, because women were not allowed in academia, in art schools, most of the women who were working as artists were actually working as apprentices to either a family member or their father who was already a well-known artist. And for much of the time, because the art market was based on the reputation of the artist, which is what gave value to the artwork, women's artwork was so devalued and deemed so not part of the art market that even if a piece of artwork was done well enough to sell, it may have been attributed to either her father that she was working for or the other art, the male artist that she was working for, or not attributed to anyone at all and sold as a piece of artwork that was made by a man, just so that piece of artwork would sell for more on the market. And so what art historians and museum directors are doing now are they're uncovering artwork by women. They're uncovering names by female artists who existed hundreds of years ago that were really written out of art history. So in order to collect those works for museums, there's a lot of research that needs to be done. But what's great is that research is being done, and that museums are being more vigilant about really when they purchase artwork, they're looking at the provenance of that artwork so that they know that the author that's ascribed to that piece of artwork is actually the author, because there's lots of examples of works of art that were ascribed to a certain artist, but then as art historians worked more, they found that it was actually another woman, like Judith Lister is one that has a lot more art has been uncovered that actually is attributed to her.
So more research needs to be done. So I'd like to move on to her art project, an initiative you also began in 2010 with the UMKC Women's Center.
So what is her art project and what does it mean?
Well, in its most basic terms, her art project is just a celebration of women in the arts. It is a program that I started at the Women's Center kind of exactly at the same time that I was doing this research. And I wanted to do a program here, a permanent program or project that recognizes women for their creativity, their contributions to art, and actually gives them opportunity to showcase their art, to showcase their poetry, to showcase whatever creative talent they may have. So through her art, we have done group art exhibits, which was our inaugural project, actually. There was, I guess I should say that her art project was also started because of a documentary called Who Does She Think She Is that came out also in 2010. And we featured that documentary as a program and had a panel discussion afterwards that featuring some local artists in Kansas City. And the documentary is about women artists. And they talk about their experiences. And so this got me thinking about, okay, let's start a program in Kansas City to support these women, because women have different needs than men. Women are recognized differently in the workforce than men. Women are still considered the primary caregiver for their families. Women are still criticized when they put anything first, including themselves, including their careers, including supporting their creativity. If they put any of that first, then they're criticized for that. And so her art project is also the support system to let women know that there are resources in Kansas City. So we try to connect women with financial resources, whether it's a grant offered by Arts KC or through Charlotte Street, whether it's studio space that they need outside of their home. So really letting women artists in Kansas City know that there are resources for them. We recognize that they have different challenges than men, and one of those challenges is that they're not shown or exhibited or allowed these avenues to express their creativity, and that's what we hope to do with her art project.
Tell us about the most recent program or event for her art project.
Most recent, I would say the biggest. We do a lot of smaller projects like the Wiki Women Artist Edit-A-Thon, where we invite anybody to come and add more women to Wikipedia, women artists especially. But the biggest project that we completed last year was the 50 Women Art Exhibit. It was a celebration of women's contribution to ceramics. It was part of the INSICA conference that was in Kansas City last year, which is this big ceramics conference. And we literally exhibited 50 fantastically talented women artists from all over the world. And this was the first time in INSICA's 50-year history, and that's why we chose 50 women, to have a show of this scale featuring only women artists. It took us 2 years to organize this exhibit at the American Jazz Museum's Changing Galleries, but was hugely successful, not just in terms of audience coming to see the show, but for the artists themselves who were in this. It gave them some validation that women are important in the area of ceramics as well as in art, but their voices need to be heard. They need to be shown, and the 50 Women exhibit was able to give them that.
Thank you. And looking ahead, do you have any other big ideas in mind?
I want to look way into the future. The UMKC Women's Center is one of the oldest college-based or university-based women's centers in the country. This year, we're 45 years old. I'm looking at our 50th anniversary being huge, and I am envisioning a huge all-female arts festival for the celebration of the Women's Center's 50th anniversary. I don't have any details for that, but because the Her Art Project is such a big project for the Women's Center, and I'm happy that it's gotten that recognition, I really think it needs to be a center point. It just makes sense that there's going to be some kind of big arts festival that's going to feature only women.
So arts organizations, hint, hint.
Exactly. And I do have to say that when I started the Her Art Project, all of the arts organizations in Kansas City just really embraced it. Arts KC was there. Charlotte Street was there. The Nelson was there. They really all showed up. We would do these conversations, these artist salons, where we just wanted to get a pulse on where are women. What's the state of women in the arts in Kansas City? And we got representatives from all across Kansas City and all across the different arts organizations that really wanted to sit and talk about this and know that this was an issue and want to help solve that problem. When I talked about our inaugural program, which was an art exhibit called Who Does She Think She Is, the Leedy Volkus, they were the first to raise their hand and say, yes, it has to be at the Leedy. We will be part of it. And they do. They hold a spot for us, or they will contact us yearly and say, we're filling our calendar. Does the Women's Center need a space for her art this year? And, you know, sometimes we'll feature women in music, so we don't need the space. But sometimes we do need the space. And it's not, sometimes it's a big space. Sometimes it's just the back gallery. But I love that the Leedy has us in their mind. And because of that, the Women's Center and our Her Art Project gets a lot of support from the arts organizations even now. So the collaborations has really been great.
It always really is nice to have that support from the community.
Excellent. Yes, it's excellent.
And finally, I'd like to talk about your own work. If you could please share with us what kind of work that you do and what influences your work.
Well, I am a painter. I study painting at KU. A lot of my painting involves collage. So I would say that although there is an image, a subject to my paintings, a lot of it to me is the process. It's the process of manipulating the paints, the fabrics, the papers, whatever materials I'm using. How can I manipulate these materials to still convey the image I want my audience to see? What influenced me on what I do a lot of apes and monkeys and primates. And honestly, I'll have to credit Deborah Butterfield, who is a sculptor, and she does horses. And when I was in art school, we had this continuous stream of artists who were on tour that would come and speak to the students. And they were well-known. Julian Schnabel, I remember, came. Andre Serrano came. But Deborah Butterfield, even Miriam Shapiro came when I was in art school. But Deborah Butterfield gave us a lecture. And she was talking about her experience in art school, how she would get stuck on, you know, trying to figure out what she was going to do. And she loved horses and had horses. And she was stuck and was talking to one of her professors, and he's like, well, what do you like? And she's like, I really love my horses. And so they said, well, do that. And so after hearing that, I was like, I really like monkeys and apes and chimpanzees. And I liked also figure painting. I always loved drawing. I took every drawing class I could, especially figure drawing class, because I loved drawing the figure. But I was really getting sick of drawing the same either models in class or my family who would, you know, be nice enough to pose for me. And so I thought, wow, I could start painting apes and monkeys and chimps. But in a way that was still about manipulating the materials to make this image. So that's where I started with doing these apes. And I would go to the zoo. Yes, I hated zoos at the time because they just seemed like, you know, all the animals were in cages. But that's what got me back to the zoo. I would go with my sketchbook and just start sketching. And I even read, I really got into Jane Goodall and did a lot of reading about Jane Goodall and her research with chimpanzees. And at that time, I was also really into Joseph Campbell and the power of myth. And he, at a presentation, he showed an image of a chimpanzee mother and her child, her baby chimp, and he called it the first Madonna and child. I was like, and that just sparked another thing in me where I was like thinking about all the religious iconography that goes along with that. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to start painting Madonna and Child, but I'm going to do it in the image of a chimp. I don't know, it's kind of tongue in cheek. I think the chimp might also be an alter ego to me. And so, yeah, that's a lot that's in my paintings are chimps. And I also do children, so I don't know what that relationship is too.
Is there a particular piece that you're working on now or a particular body of work?
Well, Sunny Ruffin and I, Sunny Ruffin is another local artist who's also one of my best friends and I've known for, gosh, over a decade. We are working on a project called Common Threads. And this is a project, and Rochelle, I know you're proud of it too, a community art project that we organized last summer after all of the violence that was happening around the world, whether it was, you know, triggered by race relations in a community that were really volatile, whether it was, you know, terrorism, violence from terrorism, whether it was police violence, gun violence, it just felt like last summer we were hearing way too much about it. And Sunny and I were talking about a show we had coming up at the Lidi Volkas, just a show for the two of us as artists. And we were trying to figure out, you know, what's the connection between our artwork? Because Sunny is a textile artist. And actually, I said, I don't know, you know, how are we going to blend my paintings and the apes that I make and your quilts that are just so beautifully done? And she changed the subject. She's like, Arzy, my heart aches. And I said, why? And she's like, just, you know, I can't watch the news anymore. There's too much violence happening. There are conversations on the radio are all about the violence. I said, well, I think that's our show. I said, let's do some artwork about how we're feeling. And then it just morphed into, well, it's not just us. We know we've been in several conversations with other people who are expressing the same thing. So we turned this idea, this opportunity that we had to exhibit our own work into a community art project. And we invited just anybody who wanted to express their feelings about violence to create a 14 by 14 inch textile piece. And textile piece was used very loosely. If people wanted to paint, if they wanted to use fabric, if they wanted to use whatever, they were allowed to make a piece that expressed their feelings and emotions about how all of the violence around the world was affecting them. And it's called Common Threads, Anatomy of the Wound. And the common thread is our feelings about violence. Anatomy of the Wound is because we all feel wounded by, even if the violence is not affecting us directly, it's just hearing about it constantly. You know, it's tearing us up. And the common thread amongst all the art pieces is a red heart. So everyone has been given free rein to express themselves how they want on their piece. They just have to include a heart on the piece. And so we exhibited this collection of pieces. There were about 40, 45 pieces of artwork at the Lidi Volkas. It opened last September. And we are talking to other arts organizations, other churches, and even other cities right now to bring this project to other areas of Kansas City, because when it's not being shown, it's boxed up in my studio, which is not the intent of it. The intent is to be a project for the people who have participated to create the artwork, to help them heal, help them deal with the violence, but also for the audience to see how violence has affected people in all these different ways.
And full disclosure, I did actually participate in this project that Arzy is talking about, and I admit I went a little bit literal. I stitched an anatomical red heart rather than the symbol of a heart.
And that's fine too. That is what was so great about this collection of work. We had other artists participate, but we also just had, you know, community centers who brought together families to create pieces. So children have made pieces. it's open to any interpretation, but I think there was a need for this. There's still a need for it. And so I'm happy that from this small project that Sunny and I were just sitting and drinking wine and trying to figure out what we're going to put in this exhibit that we're doing together has turned into this community project that has, you know, touched so many people, involved so many people, and is continuing to involve the communities.
Well, RZ, thank you. I think what's really remarkable about the work that you're doing and have been doing for quite a while now is that you're able to reach out to both prominent arts organizations, you're able to work with artists, and you're also able to work with community members. And connecting all of those is certainly, I'm biased, but I think both a remarkable and a really valuable thing. And I think Kansas City is very lucky to have you. So,
stop.
So, RZ Molly, thank you once again for taking the time and sharing your work and your story with us today.
Well, thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
If you like today's slice, please rate and review KCR Pie in iTunes, which helps other people find the podcast. And you can also subscribe to the Pie through your favorite podcast listening app. You can also reach out through Facebook and Twitter. Just search for KCR Pie. Until we nosh again, I'm Rochelle Gardner-Rowe, and thank you for listening.